at the donut. On this crazy early morning, which is my fault, which will be explained later, we'd like to welcome everyone to Exit the Donut. I guess we're based on movies, our appearance is done by like movie showings and whatnot, and today is all about Guardians of the Galaxy and more Marvel Cinematic Universe. My name is Richie. Thank you so much for everyone kind of tuning in again. With me today we have...
Hi, this is Amy.
I am Groot.
Hashtag, I think, one of the best characters. So, obviously, let's just jump right into it. Guardians of the Galaxy came out, oh gosh, what was the date here? A couple of weeks ago? I think it was the 31st of July, leading into the first of... September for a really, really good weekend, and Guardians of the Galaxy is Marvel Cinematic Universe's probably most obscure movie that they've come to date, considering all the other franchises that have come before. A lot of people knew who Iron Man was, definitely, you know, Thor, Captain America, but if you ask who the characters were for Guardians of the Galaxy, we probably wouldn't know before. So I think the movie, let's go ahead and talk about just overall quick impressions of the movie. I was so pleasantly surprised by this movie. You know, you had James Gunn, who had done really small projects before this one, and I thought that he came out with, you know, almost a film that plays up to its obscurity. It had great music, and we'll kind of get into the music like a little bit later. I thought the plot was nice and simple for what it needed to be. The character development, the characters were, at least for R5, to get to know five people at once rather than your usual, you know, one character really to concentrate on was a really, really interesting thing. And I did, you know, I think some people could have been done more, but overall I was really, really happy with the movie. So, Amy, what'd you think overall?
Overall, I thought it was really, really fun. Just a great mix of humor and action and, you know, enough character development, like you said, you know, with having that new of a cast and not having the backstory for any of them, at least for myself, other than a small comic that I did read before, you know, a couple months ago. But I thought they did a great job with the marketing going in. The anticipation was really high, so, and I was hoping they would deliver, and they certainly did, so.
Great. Groot, what did you think?
Yeah, so this is one of the movies I've probably been most excited for that I can remember in a long, long time. I followed the production of this movie from before they started filming. It was already in pre-production. James Gunn had already been attached as the director, but I, before they even hired Chris Pratt, I had been following James Gunn and the Marvel people on Twitter and following the sort of movie rumors and news. And so I had extremely high expectations. You know, there's a talking tree and a talking raccoon, and he has a big gun, and so that sounds really fun. But I didn't know what to expect. When the marketing came out, you know, it was designed, and I thought it was marketed really well, designed to educate people as to what the Guardians were and kind of what we were going to see. And the very first trailer, you basically see like an opening sequence to the trailer that looks very similar to the opening scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark, where Indiana Jones goes into the temple to retrieve the golden idol, and from that moment I was really my expectations went way up, and it delivered in almost every way. It's not a perfect film by any means, no. But it's so much fun that you almost don't care about the problems. And most of the time I care about the problems a lot, and it was just really fun. It was so good that everyone I've talked to, about the film, and there's more people that I know that have seen the film in the first 3 days here than I would have expected, given its subject matter. Everyone I know can't wait to see it again, and I know all three of us have already seen it twice. So I think that's pretty high praise for a movie. I currently have it rated as my second favorite film of the year, and it's certainly the most fun film of the year. I don't think that there's really any debate about that.
What's your number one?
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh my God! All right, whatever. All right, we'll. All right, well.
Did you
okay.
see it though, finally?
You know what? I have not because I was telling them okay that I had just watched the first one with is it Dawn of the Apes, right? That's the first one, right?
Yeah. Rise.
The first one is Rise.
Right. The first one is Rise. Yeah. Okay. The first one's Rise, then the second one is The Dawn. I don't know.
The second one?
I get it. You rise before the dawn. All right. Okay. I get it. All right. I thought it would dawn first, but I will wait until I see that movie to see what direction it went in.
The first movie was okay. It was surprisingly not terrible.
Yeah, and
this new one is completely different, and it's the best thing I've seen this year.
Maybe it's for me because I think that you expect the use of special effects, obviously, like in Guardians of the Galaxy. For Rise of the Dawn of the Apes, I don't know. In a way, it almost freaked me out. But yeah, we'll talk about that once I like see that like at a future date. But yeah, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy is, you know, as we're all talking about, it really is kind of like the dark horse of all the films. I think it's the most ambitious that Marvel has decided to do, because on the strength of what the original characters were before, where does this kind of fit in to the universe? So let's start talking a little bit of some of the characters that we have in it. So we'll obviously start off with Chris Pratt's Peter Quill / Star-Lord, who I thought was... Marvel continues to, I think, surprise us with just good casting. Have they gotten some wrong? Yeah, perhaps, you know, Edward Norton, I think, was a great part for Bruce Bane, but I thought he was, you know, he has a tendency to do this thing where he wants to take over, like, a project and not really go on with Marvel's, like, bigger vision. But I thought Chris Pratt was an interesting choice. And how did you two... like him. Let's start with Mike on this one. How'd you like Chris Pratt as your main protagonist from the movie?
So I didn't really know a lot about Chris Pratt before he was cast in this. I'd seen him a little bit. I'm not much of a sitcom watcher, so right. I hadn't really watched much of the stuff that he'd been on with Parks and Recreation. He won me over with his voice work on the Lego movie, which is also one of my favorite movies of the year. It's tremendously fun. I wasn't sure what to think about him because, you know, he's just a comedic actor, and I don't think he's just a comedic actor anymore after this. He's also been cast as the lead or one of the leads in Jurassic World, which is one of my other favorite franchises, although that's gone kind of wayward, so we'll see where that is next year. But he was quite good. I was completely and utterly sold on him during the opening credit sequence. He does a sort of fun dance number during the credits that's a total montage to, again, that opening scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark. But instead of serious and dark, he's got his headphones on and he's dancing to, I don't remember, one of the 80s songs from the soundtrack. It was awesome. And he, you know, what I would say is of the five Guardians, you know, the voice guys, they're strong the whole way through. But the three live-action Guardians, him and Zoe Saldana as Gamora and Dave Bautista as Drax, he was the best throughout. I don't think he had the deepest moments, but he was the best throughout.
Okay. Yeah. You can't say what you're wondering. It's,
What's the matter with
if anyone gets a chance, that's Come and Get Your Love by Redbone. And we'll get into music here for a little bit. But Amy, what did you think of Chris Pratt? Were you a fan ahead of time, or did you know much about his work, or were you just...
Yeah, he's done a lot of minor roles. He's never really been, like, leading, you know... I don't know, like the leading man role, that's so not who he was. He was like the fat, funny guy, mm-hmm. you know, who always had the nice little one-liners and stuff like that, and he's great at that role. And this one, he's kind of still that same guy in spirit, but, you know, he's the leading man, and I think he did a great job. I thought it was a very ambitious move, but, you know, like I said, Marvel has been very smart about the casting that they've done, and a lot of the people that have given them, you know, crap over the years about who their choices are, I think people have always been surprised by how, you know, that it was the right move. So I think he was great. I don't know, you know, if I could pick anybody else that might have done the role better. Probably not, but that's not who, you know. I thought he did great, yeah, overall. I was very impressed.
He could almost be like, and you hate to do comparisons like this because it's too easy, but he could easily be like a Harrison Ford, I think. You know, he's got enough, you know, characters like Han Solo and Indiana Jones, sure, they're smart, but they really rely a lot on, I guess, the cunning of the actor rather than like, and he is kind of like that, I would say, as well. You know, he doesn't have a superpower. Right, he doesn't have like he's
not.
What's
that?
What's
that? I don't know about that.
Oh yeah, okay. Oh well, okay. Sure. So okay, you're right. So we don't really know. Well, you know that he's okay. Let's.
We all,
in yeah. the character, he's half. Yeah, he's half. You know, half not human or something like that. But he isn't quite, you know, on a completely human with super intelligence like Tony Stark. And he didn't have some kind of accident happen to him or anything where he's kind of like buffed up. He really relies on smarts, like street smarts, to get through. And sometimes that makes a natural leader. And let's go ahead and take the rest of the characters by pairs. Let's go ahead and talk about Gamora and Drax first because they're kind of similar. And then obviously we'll end with talking about Raccoon and Groot, or Rocket, actually, not Raccoon. Rocket, please forgive me if he's out there, who is like my favorite character. But let's go ahead and start with Gamora and Drax. And you know, if you read, like, you know, the original, like, Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, it's kind of an interesting pick to get these two characters. You know, Gamora, portrayed by Zoe Saldana, I think was, you know, she's supposed to be, even she self, the actress even admits that she's supposed to be a stealthy assassin, and that she can kick butt, and that she's pretty rough, and you know, like, she had, like, that great line in the movie where she's like, warriors, you know, don't dance or something like that. And I think that Zoe did a pretty good job. I think Mike might have a different opinion, but I thought overall she was good. I think she tried to play up her in a different way, but I didn't see much of her stealthiness as much as it's brought up as a comic character. She is a badass. She's probably known as one of the more stronger, if not one of the strongest female characters in the Marvel universe as far as a comic is concerned, and I really liked, I actually, you know, had no qualms about where her, the direction that her character went in. You know, Zoe Saldana was actually said in an interview that she modeled the style of her, first of all, when she's like, I'm not a dancer, and Zoe actually is a dancer in real life, she said it was hard to get those body movements, so she said that she had talked to the stunt coordinators and modeled a lot of her fight scenes almost based on a matador, which I thought was an interesting, and if you look at the way that she fights, it's like a just enough movement to get out of the way and almost like using someone else's strength against them. You know, she's not like quite brute, like as opposed like to say like a Drax Destroyer. Now Drax is, you know, is played by Dave Bautista, formerly of WWE, and that's also another, I don't know how important that role is to people, but I'm glad that they took a chance on him. I liked him. I thought he brought a little bit of emotion, had some, an almost like an eloquent, almost like poetic talk kind of thing. And both of them are very, very similar, you know. Both of them have had loss on a different kind of, well, all five characters have had some kind of loss. But out there, you know, Gamora's entire race was destroyed, and She was basically adopted by Thanos in the comic line to become like the perfect like assassin and got like enhanced. Drax, in a way, had his own loss, probably even harsher. His daughter and his wife were taken away from him. So there was a different motivation from both of them, but I actually like both of them. So, Amy, we'll go to you. What did you think about both of those characters?
Yeah, I was excited that they chose Zoe for the role because I really like her in the movies that I've seen. I thought she was great in Columbiana and some of the other stuff that I've seen her in. I loved her opening scene with Chris Pratt when she's standing outside of the, not the collector, but the other guy. She's...
The broker.
Yeah, the broker, yeah. And she's eating the apple, and she's like, what happened? You know, I thought that was a perfect way for her to, like, you know, to introduce, kind of come into the movie. And I really liked that sequence. There were other things that I thought were not, you know, but I don't think it was necessarily her acting. I think maybe the writing could have been a little bit better for her. I would have liked to have seen more of her backstory, and maybe we'll get that in the next one when they have more time to do some flashbacks or something, because I'm very intrigued by her and her sister, Nebula, who I thought was probably my favorite bad guy in the movie. I thought she was great. I was really impressed with that character. So I want more of that. Batista, Mike and I were talking about this yesterday, you know, because what most people know him from is WWE, and in that, he's like the dumb jock. I mean, he was always kind of like just the show. But in real life, he's very, very funny and, you know, just a silly, playful guy. And so I thought that the fact that he had to be such a literal character and everything was taken so literal, I thought was absolutely hysterical for him, because I can just picture them doing this retake after retake because he starts laughing because it's just so ridiculous that he's having to say it this way. But I thought he did a good job. I like his development through the story. I think he had kind of one of the better kind of story arcs, you know. And so I thought he did I thought they both did a great job. I probably, if I had to lean towards one or the other is in the role, I would probably say that Drax, I thought, was a stronger character overall in the story, which was a little surprising.
Yeah, Mike, what about you?
So there's a lot of characters in this movie, like a lot of characters. I think when I was reading some of the stuff that James Gunn had talked about during their press stuff, that the first cut of the movie was about 5 hours long, and the actual movie is about 2 hours long. So I think that there was a lot more development for a lot of characters, including their side stories, there's bad guys, there's all kinds of stuff in this movie, and it's great. And I think Gamora got shortchanged a lot. A lot of the marketing that this movie had in the previews is not in the final film, including a scene where she's mostly naked. It looks like she's getting out of a bed. And I feel like her sort of her strength, you see it right off, as Amy pointed out, at the very beginning with her kind of using her feminine wiles to disarm Star-Lord, and then he takes his orb and runs and all that. But she's also, like you said, Richie, uses everybody's strength against them and is very, you know, she's powerful but not in a muscular way. And mm-hmm. I think that comes through the best in the scene in the prison when they're escaping. She does a really nice job there, and they do a really good job of that. The rest of the film, I think that they shortchange her quite a bit, and I don't think it's her fault.
No.
But there are some moments, particularly when she's speaking to Nebula, where I felt like she's outclassed by the other actors in the movie, and that surprised me a lot. I don't know if that's her fault or if that was the direction. I almost feel like in some ways, at some moments, and I felt less of this the second viewing through, that they were intentionally overacting in some ways, not just her, but some of the other guys, in the same way that Star Wars is sort of famous for kind of overacting a little bit. Even though there's some great actors in those, like, you know, Harrison Ford's not an overactor, but there's some of the things in there that don't like that. But she's good. I would love to see a solo movie of her sort of escapades. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Drax, I thought, I was surprised by how good he was. again, I think he gets better, just like Zoe said, and I think Batista gets better as the movie goes along. By the end, he has some of the more powerful, subtle, emotional moments, which surprised me. He's great. I'd love to see him in the next one. So they were both entertaining and fun and kind of what you'd expect.
Yeah, which is always refreshing, and I'll agree with Mike, you know, I think for that reason, you find out a little bit of them in quick snippets. You don't necessarily they could have easily have done, I think, flashback sequences.
Yeah.
But if you do that, you have to do four of them.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of already went through that with Chris Pratt's, Peter Quill, on Earth, which, by the way, what a freaking powerful scene to start off a movie. Like, that's intense, for anyone, and we'll talk about, who this audience is meant for in a little bit. I want to talk about Rocket and Groot.
I am Groot?
I personally, was so surprised. I think when they were talking about the first team, when they were discussing about in the comics, it's sometimes portrayed that Rocket does like a Cockney accent, Rocket. And then sometimes he does like a city accent. So it was kind of interesting to find out where he was. And I think like the first executives when they heard it, they're like, "We can't hear Bradley Cooper." And James Gunn's like, "Exactly. You shouldn't hear. If he's that good of an actor, he should be playing a good character." So, I didn't know much. I picked up a couple comics about Rocket ahead of time. I certainly knew of him, from video games and just obscure, references and comics. And I was so happy with the direction that they went in with him. He, again, comes from some kind of loss, but instead of, losing, his family or his world, he really lost his identity. Even when he's referenced, someone called him a raccoon, he's like, "What's a raccoon?" He's just so oblivious to his own situation. But I love how they made him so ho-hum about technology. Every single time he'd put something together, he'd be like, "Hmm." Like, it's so something simple for him, and he's the one who had that great idea in the prison. And and it's such a counterpoint to Groot's character, and so that's a very interesting characterization because obviously we know he's almost like a Hodor, right? Hodor, in Game of Thrones. But whereas saying, that Vin Diesel's character is actually doing so many subtle inflections in his voice to respond to things, and you don't even get and how great the movie was is that you think it's just Chris Pratt is like, "Gosh, doesn't he say anything else?" And then eventually later, down the line, Bradley Cooper's character starts answering the question, before he said, he'd be like, he goes, "You're right, they are ungrateful," It's like, "Wait, what? What just happened?" And you slowly start noticing that, wow, the relationship's a little bit closer. And what a cool, buddy situation, and that's how it is. And I thought it was fantastic. Rocket by far is probably, and some of the jokes that he comes out with in this movie, there's this one where, spoiler for anyone if you haven't seen the movie, it's that classic thing that happens in movies where you have a team of people, and one guy's like, I don't know how we're gonna do this, but let's get in there. Everyone's like, "I will stand by us. I will go with you into battle. I will do this." And he's like, "Well, you know what? My lifespan isn't supposed to be like this." He's like, "Now I'm standing. Y'all happy? We're all standing now." And that's the thing, that the bunch of jackasses. That's what this movie does, is that they're acknowledging, I think, almost the campiness that they could easily fall into. Any moments of tension, they're kind of broken into. So, Amy, what did you think about those two characters? And they are pretty extreme, for the characters, as far as characterization. So what'd you think, Amy?
Yeah, I'm not a huge Bradley Cooper fan. I'm not. He's just not my cup of tea. He kind of annoys me. But I was very pleasantly surprised. I thought he did a phenomenal job as Rocket. I mean, Rocket was great. Rocket was absolutely great. But Groot stole the show for me. I told Mike at the end of the movie, I'm like, "I want a Groot in a pot." I'm like, sorry, another spoiler alert there. I'm like, I love Groot, because I feel like in a lot of ways, because I tend to be more of a listener, I'm not the has to steal the show type personality like Rocket. And I'm not saying I'm a group, but that I can, you know, it's like that's more me, the silent type. Maybe doesn't say as much, but it's always thinking and always has, you know. So I thought Groot was great. He, you know, said so much just in his facial expressions and, like you said, the different inflections and the small undertones. And he's kind of the moral compass for Rocket, too, which I thought was great, you know, because you need that. They're like the yin and yang for each other, and they need that. They balance each other out. They absolutely stole the show for me.
Yeah. Mike, what'd you think?
So you go for Rocket and you stay for Groot. Rocket is going to be a breakout star. He's in, like, you can't get Peter Quill costumes very easily, but you can get Rocket costumes. He's going to be the kid thing that all the kids love. And he's wonderful. He's great. I loved him. All I needed to know I wanted to see this movie is we have a raccoon who talks, likes big guns, and makes jokes. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, this should be fun even if it's terrible, and it's not terrible. It's really great. I love that he is the Donatello of the group. He's the intellectual one. He's the one that's smart and figures everything out before everybody else. The whole team complements themselves in really great ways, but Rocket is the smart one. He's the one that figures out the plans in order to what to do in several different places, and it's obvious that that's going to be his role going forward. And he's wonderful. He's great. Groot is one of the best things I've ever seen on film. Going back to Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, you see some of the same sort of lack of actual verbal expression, but you're communicating. And that's the whole thing with Groot. He says three words, I am Groot. But he said, as Richie pointed out, says so many different ways. He's hysterical when he can be. He's intimidating and wonderful. He's novel in the way that they use him. Mm-hmm. I also like that because he's a plant, he doesn't really have a heart. So it doesn't matter what you break off, he can grow back in the same way that a tree can. Or maybe a tree is maybe the wrong thing. But, you know, if you cut off part of a bush, it grows back. There's no core, right? I mean, you can't rip the roots out, but all that, right? So very, very interesting, very well done. Both of them, the CGI was, it was beautiful. Groot has two or three of the funniest moments in the whole movie. The part of the movie that I laughed out loud the most at was toward the end where he's in a fight scene, and at the end of it, he sort of turns around and smiles. And I was almost in tears. I may have actually been in tears. I was laughing so hard. I had to go see the movie again to see what I missed because I was laughing so hard. And then there's a moment in the prison scene where they're discussing money, where he comes in a couple of times, and it's just great. They use him perfectly. He's wonderful and perfect.
Yeah, it's, you know, you get so surprised. You know, that scene's almost like, in terms of bruteness, kind of reminds me of the scene from The Avengers with the Hulk.
Yes.
You don't expect it to happen, you know, but what a different ending, you know, like, whereas Hulk kind of like just, we've never really seen Hulk do that to someone. And I think it'd be brutal to watch him do it to anyone except a god who could probably take it.
Right.
You know, those hits. It's not like a hit to kill you, it's more like a hit to shut up. Like, I don't care, like, what you're saying, but this, you know, Groot, I mean, that's a, it went on for a lot. There's even that great scene where you know, I think Drax is, like, right over here, and Star-Lord's right here, and Star-Lord has, like, his mask on, but he's, like, just looks back at, like, Drax, and Drax just gives him, like, a confirmation smile, like, it's awesome. You know, let's talk about a little bit of some of the comedy scenes. So, like, Mike, like you were just saying before, there's a great scene where, you know, where Rocket is so smart that he was getting, like, those scenes where he gets frustrated, where he kind of, like, pulls, like, his, you know, like, he can pull the fur, like, that's, like, right here, but, like, he does, like, that great frustration scene. Anything with him in, what's the great one? Oh, there's a prison start scene where they're trying to figure out how to get out of there, right? And he's laying down the plan. And first of all, what sucks about that scene, and you kind of have to see it twice, is the first one that most people see is that Groot's in the background, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he's completely, like, you know, whatever they're talking about, like, you know, he's, like, getting out. But I don't know if you guys got a chance to actually listen to the conversation that Rocket has with Gamora and Pratt. Like, do you know what, Mike, do you know what he's saying to her?
Yeah, he's talking about the plan. And they need the arm piece and...
But he goes... I don't know if anyone missed this, so he goes, he says a lot of bald, you know, shaped guys here who are very attracted to you, and maybe you can use them to, you know, make you use that to get it. And she's like, she goes, what are you implying? He's like, I forget he says it. He's like, a lot of people think you're attractive.
He goes, you've got to be joking or something like that. Evidently they truly find you attractive. Yeah.
And it's not that, like, and it's so against the joke that, like, to, hey, not to use your, you know, to use your sexy wiles. It's more for, like, the other part. Like, it's so subtle. It's so great. And then even the part with the leg. Like, I didn't. Yeah, gosh, I'm so sorry for anyone who hasn't seen the movie yet. But it's really, really great scene. And then they play homage to that scene. Like,
I'm going to die.
Yeah, like an hour later. He's like, you already know it's like a joke. And he's like, he's, like, laughing into his hands. I mean, gosh, you know, those... And then everyone really, really gets a good comedy moment. You know, sometimes some characters are left to their own devices, but Gamora gets one. I think any scene... I think any scene with Peter Quill, like the pelvic sorcery scene, like, outside, like, the music, or like, the scene, like, after he saves her, like, from the airlock and everything, and, she, you know, he just goes... He's like, I felt something so... You know, heroic, and so he's like, she's like, oh my god, like she really is. Out of anyone in the movie, and I think that's a great characterization. Is that she's the only one who's kind of like, you know, grounded. You know, like, here's our mission. Like, we got to keep on it. And then even Drax, like, his literalness, like Amy, like, so what did you guys think about, like, how, was the comedy too much? Was it not enough? What do you guys think? Well, Mike, we'll start with you.
Yeah. So. So one of my complaints about Iron Man 3 was that at every turn, they chose to make the choice to be funny at the expense of being of spectacle and, high stakes. And the Mandarin twist, of course, is the sort of greatest example of that. Instead of having this huge, amazing, you know, culmination, you get a guy, you know, taking a dump in a toilet. And yes, it's funny, but it lowered the stakes. The brilliance of this movie, and one of the things that makes it so great, and one of my favorite Marvel movies, and one of my favorite movies, period, is that they don't do that. The humor is additive. It takes the weight of the moment off of you as an audience member and lets you laugh. But it doesn't rob any of the moments of their weight or spectacle. You know, the bar fight scene, you know, you get a little bit of humor, but it's still weighty. The decision that you were talking about where they all stand in a circle, it's a very emotional, heavy moment, and they break the end of it by giving you humor, but it doesn't rob the moment of its intensity, and the stakes afterward are still there. And so there's all of that all the way around. And it's from the very beginning with the I'm Star-Lord and Korath's
who,
you know, that you see in the trailer that's at the very opening of the movie. That was a funny moment that doesn't get weighed down by the funniness and the humor. It allows the moment to be broken for a minute to let the audience breathe, and then you get more. You get more action and more consequences, and it's great. It's great. Everyone in the movie is funny. Glenn Close, who has a small role as Nova Prime, has some funny moments.
Oh, yeah.
John C. Reilly's great. Yondu, Michael Rooker, has some funny moments. And he, by the way, has one of the coolest weapons I've ever seen. It's very funny, and the humor is perfect. Exactly. The humor is perfect. It's well-balanced. I don't think it's too much, and I think it helps you buy in.
Yeah.
I mean, because there's a talking raccoon, so I mean... You can't try to play it straight.
Amy, what do you think about the level of comedy in this movie?
You know, I was so into the movie the first time I watched it that I was completely locked in. I wasn't listening or thinking about anybody around me. But yesterday when we went and saw it in IMAX 3D, you know, we had just seen it the night before. And so there were several times where I found myself listening to other people in the theater's reaction to what they, you know, because I could tell that a lot of people that were in there, it was the first time they'd seen it, obviously. Okay. And so it was a very interesting, because I don't know that I've ever seen a movie twice that close together where most of the people that were in there were seeing it for the first time and not, oh, it's 2 weeks later and they just wanted to see it again. And so it was a very interesting situation to get to hear people react to it, the genuine laughter. You know, it wasn't a forced, like, or an uncomfortable, you know, like sometimes the humor in movies, it's kind of like, you know, you don't know if you should laugh or not, if it's meant to be funny or if it's, you know. But I thought the humor was, like I said, I don't know that you wanted to do any more, but I don't think it was too much either. You know, I think it was just kind of, it was perfect. It was, you know, just the right amount, I'd say, to kind of break up, like Mike said, some of the seriousness, but then, you know, you're still right there in it.
Yeah, you know, Chris Hemsworth, who plays Thor, said in an interview one time that he's like, I think the humor is just enough in his movies. He goes, that factor, which I think other studios like, you know, I think DC is going to have a hard time doing is that he said that the comedy is a tension breaker, but it helps, I guess increase your suspension of disbelief in the scene. Like, it gives you a chance to really, really get into to characters, because, you know, you need a tension breaker every once in a while. And I think it does. This movie, if most action movies for, like, the summer, I know producers are always like, I need action beats. Something has to happen, like, every so often, like, in an act to keep this, if it's going to be, like, a big movie. But I felt that mix of comedy in there was so genuine and so awesome. Now, on the flip side of that, let's talk about some of the emotional scenes of this movie. And again, very, very surprisingly emotional. And we get a different dynamic, you know. Like, we didn't, you know, in an ensemble movie like The Avengers, we didn't get, like, that family feel. So for me, like, the big emotional scenes were of start right off the bat with Peter Quill. Like, his character right off the bat. I mean, that's some heavy stuff to throw at it, but that, you know, that is a constant theme till, like, the end of the movie is his mother's role in his life. And really, the thing that he has that is really one of his biggest, only big things from Earth is the music. And he probably hasn't listened to, like, a new song in, like, a while till, you know, eventually, like, later. And then what are the other scenes? How about the scene with Groot? Towards, like, the very end, where, you know, it's kind of like, he's like, I know what I'm doing. He goes, but it's okay, because, I mean, when he did the We Are Groot line, ugh, you know, forget about it, you know, like, I'm like, it's almost like that scene in Toy Story 3, you know, like, that's not supposed to be an emotional scene, but they're all about to peace out, you know, like, as a group, so they're all, like, kind of, like, together, and then this one's, you know, I feel like this group, like, they're a bunch of misfits. You know, they're almost like a bunch of orphans in a way who are just kind of searching for their identity, like, in this world. So, what did you guys think about? Was it too emotional that it wasn't accessible? Amy, let's start with you on that one. Did you, you know, did it poke at you? You know,
I think it allowed you to emotionally connect to the characters in a way that a strictly action movie where you don't, you know, you have this pissed off character and you're like, well, man, I just don't understand why he's so mad. You know, gave you a little insight to them and into their humanity, and it, you know, gives you something to connect to them, because regardless of their circumstances or your circumstances, you know, most of us have been through something in our lives that, you know, and experienced some sort of loss that unites us and can, you know, connect us in a way. And so I thought it was, you know, there were some very heavy scenes at the end with Drax and Rocket. I thought was a great scene. Oh. It was very emotional, and I was very upset because I was like, "Oh, they cannot kill Groot." I'm like, "This is not okay," you know, with me. But you know, there again, it was the perfect way. You know, the way that they did it was perfect. You know. And, of course, if any of them, I mean, they were all probably at that point willing to sacrifice themselves for each other. You know, they'd created that emotional bond between each other that they would have laid down their life for each other. But, you know, it just, I just can't say it enough. It was, everything about it was perfect. Mm-hmm. I thought they did it very well.
Mike, what'd you think?
Yeah, so I agree. The emotional stakes give the movie weight and meaning that you don't get in a lot of the other Marvel films. Your point with the Avengers is, you know, they, in the Avengers, you know, they talk briefly about Jane Foster and they give you Pepper in a plane, and but nobody's out that you care about is ever really at risk except the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and obviously Coulson dying, sort of, until they had a TV show. And you know, but here, you are forced to identify with these characters in a way, and they are more like you than any of the other Marvel heroes. There's not been a lot of Hawkeye character development in any of the Avenger films, and it's really hard to relate to Fury or Black Widow or Hulk. It's impossible to relate to Thor, and Tony Stark's probably the closest, but he's this rich, crazy billionaire. You know, Peter Quill's just this lost kid. You know, Gamora is, you know, this person who doesn't get along with her father, right, at all, and feels like she's been manipulated. Drax has lost everybody that's important in his life, and he's just furious about it. And Rocket and Groot are, you know, the buddies that without each other they wouldn't be able to make it through life at all. Literally, they depend on each other for everything. And as they come together as a family, it, the movie's about family. I mean, that's what the movie's about. It's not about space or an orb or craziness. One of the things that's problematic about the movie is that they don't do that with anybody else. You see it a little bit with Yondu, but and a kind of a little bit with some of the Nova people at the very end. But because there's so much in the movie, you don't get the development on the villain side. What makes Thor and the Avengers so great, and what my contention about superhero movies in general is that people don't go to superhero movies for the superhero, they go for the villain. The great superhero movies have the great villains. If you think about the original Batman, The Dark Knight, the Avengers, the bad guy is spectacular. Loki is great. Red Skull, one of the reasons I like Captain America, the first one, the Red Skull is great. The thing that makes Thor the Dark World no fun is that Malekith is so generic and vanilla. Here, Nebula is great, and you actually get emotional connection to her. There's a scene with Thanos where she's talking about where he says that, you know, Gamora is his favorite daughter, and Nebula is obviously spurned by that, and she's in the room. She's like, hey, Dad, I'm, like, right freaking here. And, you know, and so you have a connection with her. You don't have that with, I don't feel, with Ronan at all. There's a couple of scenes and a couple of comments throughout that sort of give him some motivation, but he's very bland and very vanilla, and that's the weakness of the movie. But because of that, you get this emotional connection that's allowed to develop with all the core characters. And I would assume that Gunn knows that, and then in the second movie, we're going to get more of that. Just as I assume in Avengers, we're going to get more of the things that we didn't get from the emotional connection in their characters. I mean, we'll see. But it's very heavy at times. The climax scene with Groot is wonderful. It's very emotionally pulling. Almost a tearjerker for me, and I don't cry a lot in films. It's really great. The opening scene's very heavy, very difficult to watch. Probably the only thing in the whole movie that would make me, you know, a little bit concerned about taking a kid, but I'm going to take my kids anyway because I think it's okay. But it's a tough watch.
Yeah, I know, it's exactly like you were saying. I think the reason why. I mean, any Marvel movie that's really over like an hour and 45 minutes, I'm super happy about because I just want more. Like, I feel like I'm cheated if I get any less than that. And you're right, there were like a bunch of scenes like in that trailer. You know, they did a pretty good job like in the first teaser trailer that came out. I thought that was smart marketing because we have no idea who these characters are. So I thought that was great. And using like the prison lineup, and you know, like, and you already know right off the bat, you know, like, you know, this group's like what a bunch of a-holes, as the guy says, you know. And even for like their mannerisms while they're just standing around, they're just like, you know, like, what are we doing, you know? And they're called the Guardians of the Galaxy, and you really are wondering. But I, you know, it's. Some of the five get, like, you know, the characters dressed, and I don't, you know, you're right, Mike. when it comes to like villains, like, you know, like the Joker and blah blah blah. But sometimes you do just need to a bad guy who is bad for the sake of being bad. Sometimes you don't have to. For me, my opinion, sometimes. But I thought they already did this with Sora. That you don't. I would have liked to find out a little bit more of how him and Thanos started like hanging out a little bit and like, you know, what's his like role. Like, he gives a little speech about himself when he's getting.
At the very beginning.
Yeah, they do it more like through that montage, just like, wow, he's someone, you know, like he's someone pretty mythical with the way that they're, it's almost like Egyptian in the way that they're kind of like garbing him up and like dressing him up. He certainly has like a big hammer instead of like a big staff or something like that, you know, like a pharaoh staff or something. And so I, sometimes it's just good to have like a good villain, but I certainly would have like a little bit more. I'm glad that they did flesh out Nebula a little bit, you know. Great fight sequences, certainly very esque of Thor and Loki in a way, as like having like a little bit of a sibling kind of like Rush. But you know, overall, it's and then we'll go ahead and wrap this up before we kind of like start talking about like the top 10. So, Amy, was there any other aspect about this movie? That really, really got you, like, anything, like, maybe, like, from the look of the film to any of the other characters or maybe even use of music? Do you have anything, Amy?
The only thing that I'll mention, I thought they I really liked the Nowhere world. I thought that all the worlds were fairly well developed because you go down to Xander and see where the Nova, you know, Nova lives, and so you see a little bit of each of the worlds. I thought they were all very interesting, and they were pretty, at least, and I'm not nearly as critical, I guess, sometimes of the visuals as like you guys are, because you're a little bit more into it than I am. But I thought they did a good job of fleshing out the worlds, and you got to see a lot of stuff, and I thought the visual effects were really great. I think sometimes because you're so into the movie, you don't really notice the stuff in the background, but I thought that they did a good job of developing, you know, the different worlds that you see. And I'd like to see more of them. You know, one of the things that Mike, at least I didn't realize was in going into the movie, and I don't think Mike did either, was that it was going to be done in the present day. We thought it was going to be in the future. This was a totally different time frame. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was an interesting thing, that this is all. So hopefully we'll get some connection with the Avengers or something else down, you know, down the road, some connection between the two groups. So.
We can only hope that. Who was that? Who came into the stream? Who was that? Amy.
Oh, it's Mia.
Okay, Amy. Yeah. Who's your good boy? Sorry, I thought you had like your own rocket. what just happened over here? God, I just hated like everything that we just did. You know, really. Fantastical. Mike, what did you think about any other aspects of the movie that really got to you?
I mean, it's really good. It's just a really good movie. I was very young when Star Wars came out right before I was born. I probably saw Return of the Jedi in theaters. I would have been about 4 or 5 at the time. I don't remember. I remember some of the later Indiana Jones movies and Back to the Future and things like that. And so, you know, this felt like what a kid will... I think that this movie... for kids that see it, will be their Star Wars. It's that good. It's a better movie than Star Wars. This is a better film than Star Wars is, from top to bottom. The bad guy is not nearly as good as Vader, but there's enough other to make it as good. And Quill's very much like Han Solo, and you know, Gunn is not much older than me, or he's about my age. He was very influenced by Indiana Jones and Raiders and Star Wars and all that. The ship battles are wonderful. We saw it originally in regular 2D, and then we went and saw it in IMAX 3D yesterday, and it was really great in 2D. I don't know that you have to go see it in 3D, but the battle sequences with the ships fighting each other, particularly the climax where you know, the Dark Aster ship is coming into Xandar, and all the little tiny ships come out of it, and the Ravagers are fighting, and then the Nova Corps comes out to you know, try to block the ship from coming in, and then they're dive bombing the city, and Rocket and the Ravagers are trying to shoot them down. It's probably one of the most visually impressive sequences I've ever seen at all. And in the middle of that is where Groot has his crazy beating people up and then smiling moment, which is wonderful. Again, using humor to break up the tension, but then going right back to it. Stakes are still high. The battle sequence with Nebula and Gamora and Star-Lord and Rocket with the little crazy mining machines and the little inside the nowhere and then outside that head and into space, especially the sequence where it's kind of floating up into space and you see all the bad guy ships and just shooting up. It's really amazing. It's worth, even if the rest of the movie was terrible, it would be worth seeing in theaters for that. And the rest of the movie's not terrible. It's very, very good. So, like I said, it's not perfect. It is not a great. There are plot holes. There are issues. The main villain is a little thin. It's a little overstuffed. We haven't even talked about the Nova Corps, and we haven't talked about Yondu and the Ravagers at all. And we've been talking for 45 minutes.
Right.
45 minutes about those things. There's a lot in this movie. So I recommend everybody go see it. It's great.
Yeah. The last thing I'll probably touch on is probably, it's my point. It's why I love. It's a thing that movies can do best. It's through its music. So I felt the score did exactly what it needed to do as far as kind of, you know, being like what scenes. But I love the use of its soundtrack, this late 70s. I thought that was a really, really... It kept it grounded, I think, for a lot of other people, you know, for a lot of the music selection. Even the music choices were kind of jokes themselves, like from the opening sequence to... There's, like, one where they started doing, like, if you like Piñas and Colada, what's the name of that song?
Yeah. Well, and the Cherry Bomb is perfect. They're all coming together at the end, and they do Cherry Bomb. I mean, it's really great. Really great music. Really perfect plot device to, again, taking a fantastical film that's set in some other part of the galaxy with people that you've never seen or weird colors and characters, but they bring you in with music from that you remember. And so anybody that's 25 and older is going to recognize all the music in this movie. And the kids are going to, they don't need it because they're going to love it anyway.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So let's kind of switch on. So Mike had a great proposition probably about, everyone go see Guardians of the Galaxy and probably go see it twice because I think it's that fantastic of a movie. So anyway, Mike and I were probably, he had this great idea probably. And it's up on our Facebook page and a couple of links. So, again, Exit the Donut. I think we lost the word podcast. Is that right, Mike?
Well, we have a site now, so it's not more than just a podcast.
I like that. So it's juicy, and I like it. And we kind of, you know, Mike did make a great point that this is the 10th movie of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So, you know, we did, like, a ranking of our top 10 choices. And I want to know, Mike, you probably have the results of all three of us. Which, do you have a comparison, like, by year or anything to see which one of those movies deviated the most?
I do.
Okay, so which one? Go ahead.
So we only voted the same on one. We all voted the same on one, and it was the movie that we all agree was the least. So I should say... I've enjoyed every single movie of the 10. And so for everybody, the 10 are in order of release: Iron Man, The Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America, The First Avenger, The Avengers, Iron Man 3, Thor, The Dark World, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, and now Guardians of the Galaxy. I've liked all of them, although I think based on the results, it's clear that there's one that's the weakest. We all rated Thor, The Dark World 10th. So all of us felt that was the weakest entry. But to your point, the movie that had the biggest spread was The Incredible Hulk. I liked it a lot, and you didn't, Richie. Amy pretty much agreed with you. You guys were very close. That was the biggest spread. I rated that my number four film. You, Richie, rated it number eight. There were three movies that we had a three-ranking spread, and those movies were Iron Man, Thor, and Guardians of the Galaxy. So there's a little bit of a spread for us on those as well.
Well, let's talk about why it is. For Guardians, if I'm not mistaken, did I text you or did I message you about this? I think I did message. So, I had for doing the as far as Guardians of the Galaxy, I actually had it ranked like number five.
Yes.
And only because, you know, let's talk about the first four. Like, first of all, this is a if I didn't know about the other movies, this could singly be like my favorite movie. But you know, The Avengers was such a geek fest for me. You know, I felt Iron Man needed to be up there, even a right below The Avengers, because that's the progenitor of all of this. You know, that's RDJ. You know, he is the reason why we're getting all of these other ones. I didn't put him number one because you know The Avengers was such a you know. Such an ambitious project, and I don't think any other director besides Joss Whedon would have been able to pull this many characters together for one particular like scene. Or I'm sorry, for one particular movie. Captain America: The Winter Soldier. As I think, if you took away all the Marvelness about a movie and had this just be a standalone, like if you didn't know who Captain America was and you didn't do whoever, it's still engaging enough of a movie for those who haven't seen it before. It's like a great espionage thriller. For those who have seen it before, it's a different direction. It's a modern take. Thor, to me, was, you know, I think Kenneth Branagh is one of my favorite characters, and I really, you know, Thor did spawn, you know, your main characters, and there were a lot of great things that came out of that between, you know, I think they got, if you want to talk about the best look for someone, I think Thor was, you know, look, and of course you had Loki, and it had a big Shakespeare quality to me. Like, once they started getting people like Anthony Hopkins and, you know, Rene Russo into it, and then you had, of course, Tom Hiddleston as Loki, it just brought it to, like, this crazy level. So that's where most of the acting, and of course Guardians is where it is, because only because those four other things were so important to me. So, Amy, where did you have Guardians ranked?
I had Guardians 3.
3.
Cap 2, Avengers, Guardians was my top 3.
Gotcha. And then
she had Captain America, The Winter Soldier, as her number one. Me and you both rated Avengers number one and Captain America, The Winter Soldier, number 3. She had Cap 2 as number one and Avengers as number 2. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting.
Mike, where did you have The Incredible Hulk?
For me, The Incredible Hulk is number 4. My top were Avengers, Guardians, Cap 2, Incredible Hulk, and then Iron Man in that order. I really think The Incredible Hulk is underrated. Until Captain America came out, it was the best story, and I don't think it's debatable. I mean, we could debate it if you want, but it's the most complete story. It actually has compelling action and drama. The one thing that's missing from that movie is the humor. It was early, so it came out like 5 weeks after Iron Man.
Yeah.
It was done before there had been an MCU movie that had been released. So right. I really liked it. I thought Edward Norton and Liv Tyler had two of the best chemistry of anybody in the whole deal. It really worked for me. The whole movie, the scene where he covers her up as the helicopter crashes around them, and General Ross is screaming. That's just a great moment, and it's really good. I liked it. Now I accept that I'm in the minority on this because most people don't even remember that this was part of the MCU, and it by far has done the least amount of money. To be fair, I think if you released it today, it would be a $500 million, you know, worldwide gross. But I think any of the movies would have been because, you know, they have the history of and the Marvel brand behind them.
I would debate you about
that. I also like the villain. I mean, Tim Roth is wonderful in that movie. And you have the doctor, the Mr. Blue, that's great. I really liked it. I really liked it. The third act's okay. It's not the best third act, which is why it's not up there as high.
Yeah! I debate you using the words "I am Groot," and I would still have a better argument than you. Yeah, you know what? I just don't know. You're right. Like, there was a resurgence of Hulk after that. Is it the best Hulk movie? Yes. I don't even want to talk about the one that happened with Eric Bana and the other one, because that movie was I mean, Ang Lee. Gosh, what a way to ruin one of my characters. I still, first of all, mutant poodles. Okay, still stupid to me. And then second of all, I think there's a scene where he picks up. Who plays Betty in that franchise? Who was it? Was it Jennifer Connelly?
What are you talking about? The first one?
The much earlier one. And I think when he fits her in his hand, she looks like me holding like a cell phone. Like she's like her head's barely out of this. But then he's able to like open up a car door and put her in. I'm like, really? Did you like pry a nail and like open the door and put her in the car? God, what a
terrible. I should say I didn't rate that movie number four. I rated the Edward Norton version, and I like the Edward Norton version a lot. I think it deals with a lot of issues and themes that are not dealt with in the rest of the Marvel universe very often. Well, it's a much more personal story.
Well, that's a hard one because you know those movies came out at the same time where they really didn't know. It all rode on the success of those two movies. Right,
and it was successful. It was not resoundingly successful, but it was successful. I looked it up. It did like 200 and something million worldwide, which is more than enough for it to have justified its existence. Yeah. It was a victim of its timing. It came out a week after Indiana Jones 4, which was not good, but it was a big movie. It came out 5 weeks after Iron Man, and people were still going to see Iron Man. And it came out a couple of weeks before The Dark Knight, but The Dark Knight was already obviously going to be special.
Right.
So it was a little bit of a victim of its timing in the same way that I feel like The Amazing Spider-Man, the first one, was a victim of its timing. It came out right at the same time as The Dark Knight Rises, and The Avengers had been out for only a couple of months. So sometimes timing makes a difference, too, in how many people see movies and what they feel about the movie at the time. Yeah. Go watch it again. It's a good movie.
I will. I'm gonna. Don't tell me what to do. I will do it. Whatever. All right. We're all standing now. But
I am actually standing.
I know you are, which is for those who are listening, we're filling in the holes for you here. All right, Amy. So what the next movie is supposed to be, The Age of Ultron, which to Marvel Cinematic Universes is the way of closing down a phase. So this is the last movie before like the big phase-ending one for Phase 2. So, Amy, let's ask you, overall, how have you liked Phase 2 between Iron Man? And it really is, save for Guardians of the Galaxy, it's really been a sequel fest, right?
Right, yeah.
Thor 2, Cap 2, like, what did you think? Like, did you, because you told me that you were kind of new to, like, kind of getting, like, into, like, all these movies. Like, did you see enough of the original movies to go into doing the sequels, and how do you think Phase 2 is?
Well, I will say, I never saw any of Phase 1 in theater.
What have you been doing? Have you been growing like gardenias or something?
Well, yes. In fact, I was. Not gardenias, but no. You know, so I will say about Phase 2, it's very special because it's the first ones that I've seen on big screens. So there's some power behind that. Overall, the stories are, in my opinion, with the exception of Cap 2 and now Guardians, are much weaker. But, you know, the experience, you know, it's been a fun experience to get to see them in the theater and you know, kind of then go back also and rewatch the old ones. Now, I had seen most of them prior to seeing any of the new ones, obviously, and not just, you know, relatively close together. But certainly it would have been, I can't speak the way that you guys do as far as seeing Iron Man in the theaters, you know, your first experience with that, because that was, certainly was not into or did not think that I would like this type of movie or these type of stories, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. I would have been like, are you kidding me? No, that's okay, I'll pass. But they're very fun, you know, and sometimes I think we take life too seriously, and so it's a nice, you know, kind of break from that, and you know, allows you to just kind of go into these worlds and enjoy it and have fun, and then you know, you can go back to your reality and that. So, but I'm looking more forward to phase three. I think that hopefully they're kind of back on the right track. I feel like they kind of derailed a little bit with the stories, and hopefully now they're kind of coming back around. So I'm excited about Avengers 2 to see what they do with that. I'm not super sold on the Thanos character, you know, but part of it is you haven't really seen much, you know, but I'm like, ugh, you know, so I'm hoping we get a lot more of that, and I'm looking forward to it, to being pleasantly surprised by his character.
Yeah, his CGI, and you know, spoiler if anyone doesn't know yet, there's just enough of Josh Brolin's mannerisms and voice. I think the villain for Avengers 2 is very appropriate, Ultron, because I think it's an interesting character to kind of get the same effect of the first movie if you're gonna make it epic. Like already, like in all the posters that we've seen, there's like a million Ultrons, right? And then I think somehow that will play into, you know, it's actually a creation of Hank Pym, who's gonna be played by Michael Douglas, which is the older character, which is an interesting move. You know, it would be like the same effect of if they made a Green Lantern movie, but they did it with Jon Stewart first before they did it with Hal Jordan, who was notoriously horribly played by Ryan Reynolds. But I think the phase two is gonna be good. And Mike, we were talking about it before like this thing started. What projects in phase three are you looking forward to?
Right, so Marvel has publicly said that they have projects planned out to 2028. And then they have set release dates for movies up until May of 2019, and there are two in 2015, two in 2016, and three in 2017 and 2018. So by my count, that's 11 movies between now and May of 2019, you know, which is not quite 5 years from now. So that's a lot of movies. There's only 10 so far. So we're going to get more than double, right? So we know that in 2015 we're getting Avengers Age of Ultron, which, as you mentioned, is the end of Phase 2, and they recently showed some footage from it at Comic-Con, and everybody lost their mind. I think it's going to be great. I don't know because I haven't seen it, but it is tracking like the rumors were for Captain America 2 and for Guardians, both of which were very positive this far out. Then we have Ant-Man, which you mentioned with Hank Pym. I actually think in Ultron that Tony Stark is going to create Ultron, but we'll see. Ant-Man, there's been a lot of issues with the production. They lost their director and creative person, Edgar Wright, about 2 months ago. They've got everything back on track, and they're filming soon. I think you, Richie, said that you, have heard some good things about that. So then 2016, we're going to get Cap 3 at the beginning in May, and then they have not announced what they're doing at the end of 2016. 2017, there's a May, a July, and a November. Only the July has been announced. That's the Guardian sequel. And then there's nothing been announced for the three dates in 2018 or the May of 2019. I'm assuming the 2018 May date's going to be Avengers, which means that we've got three open spaces before Avengers. I think we're going to get Doctor Strange at the end of 2016 after Captain America 2. And that still leaves two more open dates. I think one of those will be Thor 3. And the other one I'm assuming is going to be either Black Panther or Captain Marvel, but it could be anything. It could be Inhumans. It could be who knows.
Yeah.
I would really like to see a Black Panther movie. I want to see more Falcon. I really like Falcon in Captain America the Winter Soldier. I'd like to see a female-led movie of some kind at some point, whether that's a Gamora spinoff or a Black Widow movie. I think what DC is rumored to be doing with their sort of team-ups that aren't everybody in a movie is smart, so I wouldn't mind seeing like a Hawkeye and Black Widow spy movie. I wouldn't mind seeing, for instance, Loki and Nebula team up and battle Thor and some of the Guardians, and you know, Lady Sif and those guys. That would be kind of fun. you know, Captain America and Iron Man, sort of Batman versus Superman kind of movie would be kind of fun, although I think we might get that in Avengers at some point. So, you know, they could go a lot of ways. There's a lot of material, source material to work with, and it's going to be interesting to see what they do. I think going back to phase two, you know, a lot of this is you have to remember what happened historically, right? You know, Captain America was not very successful. It didn't do a lot more money-wise than The Incredible Hulk did. You know, and Thor was successful, but it wasn't unbelievably successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the domestic box office, it's Avengers and then it's the three Iron Man films.
Right.
So you know, I think when they were producing, and there was, it should be said, in 2012, there was supposed to be a second Marvel film. I think they were supposed to do The Inhumans or one of those movies at that point, but they decided not to do it to focus all their effort on Avengers, which paid off brilliantly. It's the third highest grossing movie ever, both domestically and worldwide. And I think Iron Man 3, for all its faults, is a product of them not knowing what was going to happen.
Sure.
The Avengers was a risk. Just like Guardians, now it's obvious it's going to be successful. It wasn't obvious that Avengers was going to be successful. Everybody assumed that it was going to be a failure because you had this TV guy who had a bunch of failed TV shows coming in to do this team-up movie with a bunch of characters that were disparate. It was hard to bring them together. Nobody knew if it was going to be possible. And obviously it is what it was. So I think Iron Man 3 was, well, let's take our core guy that we know is going to be financially successful, make a smaller movie just involving him so that if this big thing crashes and burns, we can still make money with Iron Man. And it was, everything was done. The script was written. The pre-production was done. They started filming after the press tours for the Avengers when the Avengers was still in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know what was going to happen, you know, when they made that movie. Mm-hmm. Thor, The Dark World, you had all this... the story was done, and there was very little Loki in it, and then the Avengers came out, everybody loves Loki, so they rewrote it kind of as it was being filmed, and I think it shows. It's very clear that they were adding things and removing things as it went along, and it comes out that way, and that's, I think, why it was not really very good narratively. Cap 2 and Guardians were both totally done after the Avengers was obviously successful and they knew what was working. And
sure.
I think you see really good stories, not perfect, neither one's perfect, but much, much, much better. They both have different strengths and weaknesses since the Avengers came out. So my hope is that they've learned those lessons. I'm a little wary of what's going to happen with Ant-Man, but I think after that, I think they have their formula. They're going to work their formula. They know what works, and I think we're going to get more of the same. I will say, I'd like to see some characters die off. The stakes, you know, they keep killing characters and bringing them back and killing characters and bringing them back. I'd like to see people stay dead because that raises the stakes and makes you believe that the stakes are real.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get that because on the business side, Robert Downey Jr. is done. Chris Hemsworth and Chris Evans both have said publicly they're tired of the work and the effort and they want to do other things and their contracts are coming up soon. After, you know, they both have, I think, Avengers, one more solo film in Avengers 3. So I think you're going to see some of that happen. Plus the comics, now they've turned Thor into a girl. They've
right.
given the mantle of Captain America to the Falcon, which Anthony Mackie played beautifully in Captain America. So I think you can see maybe where it might be headed.
Yeah.
And that's exciting. It could be really interesting and really fun.
I think Ant-Man's going to be really, really strong. I have a personal connection to that movie, which will become apparent later. Probably like more like towards the completion of it, and I'll tell you why. That's a pretty good movie. I like how they're going with the character of Scott Lang. Even though the character again should be Hank Pym, I think Scott Lang I don't want to reveal too much about it, but you really need to see how he got involved with being like. So just kind of Google it up and see how his character got into the Marvel Universe. So that's a I think that's more of an interesting for a movie than the Hank Pym story would be. Hank Pym would probably come off like somewhere in between Bruce Banner and like a Tony Stark or something in terms of like genius level and like boringness. So, you know, we'll talk about it at a later time, but you know, we have, you know, Marvel's like what's next for them. I mean, we've got, again, like the Avengers, we have Ant-Man, Captain America 3, Doctor Strange, you got Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which I'm super excited about. And then you also have TV, again, you've got Agent Carter, who's going to be coming in, filling the hiatus spot for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I'm super looking forward to, because I think Hayley Atwell is both beautiful and brilliant as an actress, and she breathes such life into this character. And then, of course, we've got the element of Netflix, which is four produced shows. So I'm hoping I don't get a Marvel overload. I think I might. I think one of these shows are going to get lost along the way. The Daredevil project, I hope that they're just, you know, the thing about Marvel is that I like the formula. Don't put too much, you know, two movies a year, that's all you need, in my opinion. So, you know, I don't know. Like, Amy, do you have Netflix or anything, or?
Yeah, we have Netflix.
The Netflix. Have you, how often does stuff like, is it movies and TV shows, or how is it?
Yes. Yeah, but it's mainly, I mean, the TV shows are ones that are in syndication or prior season, like when a complete season. So it's not, now we also have Hulu Plus, which that's a lot of your network television. Like once it's aired on TV, then it'll show up on there.
Okay.
So you have current season stuff on Hulu.
But Netflix has a lot of original programming, which is one of the things that they're doing with the Marvel stuff. They have two shows right now that are up for Emmys, and I think they're going to win a lot.
Is it one like Orange?
Yeah, House of Cards is the one that everybody loves that we actually haven't watched at all yet. But Orange is the New Black is sort of like if you took HBO's Oz but set it in a women's prison and tried to make it a little funny.
Okay.
It's brilliant. It's really great. Really, really funny and interesting and dramatic and really good. We've watched almost the entire first season of that, and they have two seasons out. So I'm interested in the Marvel Netflix stuff a lot. Daredevil will be very interesting. It's set all in New York. They're going to film it in New York. It's supposed to be much more noir and, you know, that style than what you're used to in the campy sort of cinematic universe stuff. So we'll see.
I'm digging it, guys. So anyway, just want to tell everyone thank you so much listening again to Exodote. You know, really, you know, I think with every single progression, you know, this is still like when we started this, was it May or was it that we started doing like a podcast or something? And you know, we just want to thank you all. You know, we're still working on a lot of things, but we feel the conversation is great. So again, feel free to comment. You know, we've got some great reviews on a lot of links on our page, whether it's our Twitter handle, or whether it's commenting on the Facebook or any of like the reviews that we have, you know, let us know like if you have an opinion about it. You know, we're gonna try and get as many likes as we can. You know, we're doing it just for the fun of it. You know, this really is a great thing that we enjoy doing. So, you know, and thank you very much for listening. You know, definitely check out Guardians of the Galaxy out in theaters, both in IMAX, 3D, and like regular as well. And I would also suggest save yourself making a mixtape and buying the soundtrack. I think it's really, really good. Not the score. The soundtrack, which is really good. And what's next for us, real quick, before we let everyone go? What's the next big movie that's coming out? Are we done? Because I remember Guardians of the Galaxy was like the only movie I was looking forward to gonna be coming out. And now it's kind of here. I feel like I'm gonna put up my thumbs like a little bit. But you know, I'm looking at this. I like to go look at some of the trailers on iTunes, on Apple's website as well as some of the other ones. I see United the Museum is coming out like later this year. There's a couple of small films in between. Gosh, anything that you guys are looking forward to, crazy, or is this kind of like the end for like the bigger?
There's a lot of interesting stuff coming out in the fairly near future, but I don't think anything. I mean, probably the biggest thing is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I think that's next week or the week after, but it's, you know, I wouldn't say that that's something that I'm super looking forward to. I'll probably see it.
Mm-hmm.
The big stuff for me is in the, late fall and early winter, probably.
Oh, yeah.
The last Hobbit film is coming out, which there was a preview for that in our IMAX showing, which looked great. There's the Hunger Games, the first
Mockingjay,
right?
Richie, I still challenge you to see the first and second one.
Amy, you got it.
Evidently, there's nothing else on your radar right now.
You're gonna take the lead on that one. Let me tell you what I did do. I actually got some movies. I got Divergent because that just came out like on DVD. So I'm gonna check out what that's all about. I did get the first two Hunger Games, and I gotta psych myself up for this, because you guys I respect as like members. The other people who I've seen, like, it's just so cool. Jennifer Lawrence is so awesome. She's so pretty, and I'm like, great. Like, you know, I had this impression in my head. It's like all these movies about like society breaking down, and then like a soul girl, you know, or a soul character is like, you know, being like the main, the superest of anti-heroes between, what's the other franchises, like, Divergent,
Twilight,
all this. I it's certainly up that genre as far as like who's associated with it, so I will see them, and we'll see how that works out. So again, everyone, thank you so much for listening. Catch us on our next link. We'll put it up on Facebook. Again, Exit the Donut. And we will see you next time, guys. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Amy. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Richie.
Yep.
You can contact us on Twitter at ExitTheDonut or our email, ExitTheDonutPodcast@gmail.com. Our website, ExitTheDonut.wordpress.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Google+. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.
Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter.